In a nondescript laboratory, neuroscientists were playing a peculiar game of Where's Waldo, except they were searching for Grandma. For decades, these scientists had been hunting for specific neurons that stored specific memories, convinced that the brain operated like a hierarchical organization with clear command centers. They wired subjects with electrodes, showed them familiar images, and waited for particular neurons to fire. But instead of neat patterns, they found a chaotic mess, multiple neurons lighting up simultaneously with overlapping patterns. The breakthrough came when MIT's Jerry Letvin proposed that memories aren't stored in specific grandmother cells, but distributed across neural networks. This seemingly primitive arrangement actually makes the brain remarkably resilient. To erase a memory, you'd need to destroy an entire pattern of neurons, not just one cell. This discovery mirrors a profound shift happening across our society. We instinctively ask, who's in charge, when examining organizations? But what happens when there's no one in charge, when there's no hierarchy? Rather than chaos, this absence of traditional leadership is giving rise to powerful organizations turning industries upside down. From music sharing to encyclopedias, from software development to social movements, a revolution is unfolding all around us, one where power flows not from the top down, but from the edges inward. In 1995, Dave Garrison found himself in an awkward position. As the newly appointed CEO of Netcom, an early internet service provider, he was in Paris trying to explain the revolutionary concept of the internet to skeptical French investors. They kept asking one question: who is the president of the internet? Garrison's explanations about a decentralized network of networks with no central authority only confused them further. Eventually, exasperated, he simply claimed he was the president of the internet to move the meeting forward. This interaction reveals how difficult it is to understand decentralized organizations when we're accustomed to centralized thinking. The French investors mistook a starfish for a spider. A spider has a head that controls its body. Cut off that head and it dies. But a starfish is fundamentally different. It has no head. Its major organs are replicated throughout each arm, and if cut in half, it becomes two starfish. For a starfish to move, one arm must convince the others to cooperate without central command. Alcoholics Anonymous exemplifies this starfish model. No one's in charge, yet everyone's in charge. When Bill Wilson founded AA, he deliberately chose to let chapters form independently worldwide rather than controlling them centrally. This decentralized approach allows open systems to adapt quickly, unlike centralized organizations where decisions must travel up and down a hierarchy, as tragically demonstrated in the 1935 Labor Day hurricane, when bureaucratic delays prevented the evacuation of workers in Florida. Decentralized organizations can mutate rapidly in response to challenges. When peer-to-peer networks faced legal attacks, they evolved from Napster to Kazaa to Emule with astonishing speed. This adaptability makes starfish organizations surprisingly resilient. They can transform entire industries seemingly overnight, demonstrating what I call the accordion principle, where industries swing between centralized and decentralized structures over time. For a century, the recording industry was dominated by a handful of corporations until hackers altered everything. This pattern repeats across industries in what I call the accordion principle. Industries swing between centralization and decentralization. When systems become over-centralized, people rebel by creating open starfish systems. How can you tell if you're dealing with a centralized spider or a decentralized starfish? Here are 10 crucial differences. First, examine leadership structure. Spider organizations have clear hierarchies with someone in charge, like MGM CEO, who makes strategic decisions. Starfish organizations are flat. Apaches had no centralized decision makers. AA's founder quickly stepped aside, and no one knows who originated Emule. Second, look for headquarters. Every spider organization has a physical headquarters. You can visit MGM CEO in Los Angeles. starfish organizations don't depend on permanent locations. AA has offices in New York, but exists wherever members choose to meet, in community centers, churches, even airports. Third, test vulnerability. Spiders die when you chop off their heads. Take out corporate headquarters and you'll likely kill a spider organization. Starfish often have no head to chop off. When Spanish killed Apache Nantons, new ones emerged. When Bill W. died, AA thrived. If record labels caught Emule's creator, the program would continue unaffected. Fourth, observe role division. Centralized organizations have departments with firm divisions. Marketing does marketing, human resources does human resources. In decentralized organizations, anyone can do anything. Members don't report to company heads and are responsible only for themselves. Fifth, examine unit independence. Decentralized units are completely autonomous. Cut off a unit and the organization does fine. The severed arm might even grow a new organization. Isolate an AA circle and both survive. Destroy half the internet's websites and it persists. Sixth, check knowledge distribution. In spider companies, power and knowledge concentrate at the top. In starfish organizations, power spreads throughout. Each member has equal knowledge and power. Every AA circle understands its members' needs and decides how to respond. Seventh, assess flexibility. Decentralized organizations are amorphous and fluid. With distributed power and knowledge, individual units quickly respond to forces, constantly spreading, growing, shrinking, mutating, dying, and reemerging. Eighth, count the members, or try to. You can count spider organization members through payrolls. Counting starfish organization members is impossible. No one tracks membership, and anyone can join or leave anytime. Ninth, examine funding. Decentralized units are almost always self-funding. There's often no central money pool. Individual units acquire and manage their own funds. Finally, observe communication patterns. In centralized organizations, important information processes through headquarters. In open systems, members communicate directly without intermediaries. These decentralized principles have transformed industries worldwide. Skype revolutionized telephony by allowing users to connect directly through the internet for free. Craigslist upended classified advertising with its community-driven approach. Apache WebSermer software, developed by volunteers, now powers 67% of all websites. Wikipedia, with its million-plus articles, proved nearly as accurate as Encyclopedia Britannica despite being written by unpaid contributors. Even Burning Man demonstrates how freedom in an open system produces both chaos and remarkable creativity. Granville Sharp's fight against slavery in 18th-century London demonstrates how seemingly powerless individuals can create massive change. Despite facing opposition from public sentiment and powerful sugar industry interests, Sharp's persistence eventually gained momentum when he joined with Quakers, forming the first of five crucial foundations of decentralized organizations. The first foundation is circles, autonomous groups where members join as equals and contribute according to ability. From Apache communities to modern virtual circles like Wikipedia and Craigslist, these structures allow independent participation. While virtual circles offer easier access and greater scale, they sacrifice the accountability and strong bonds of physical circles like Burning Man or AA. Instead of hierarchical rules, circles operate on self-enforced norms that members embrace as their own. The second foundation is the catalyst. Individuals like Granville Sharp, Bill W., and Apache Nantons who initiate movements then step aside. Like iron in a chemical reaction that facilitates bonding without becoming part of the final product, these leaders start circles, then fade into the background. They generate ideas but never force views on others. Unlike Maria in The Sound of Music, who stays to run the show, effective catalysts are more like Mary Poppins. They accomplish their goal, then leave, transferring ownership to the circle. Ideology serves as the third essential foundation, the glue binding decentralized organizations together. While community is important, it's shared beliefs that truly motivate unpaid participation. The Apaches were united by their conviction about self-governance and independence. AA members adhere rigorously to the 12 steps, believing deviation means returning to alcoholism. For abolitionists like Shark and the Quakers, fighting slavery became a life's purpose. The fourth foundation is a pre-existing network. Successful decentralized movements typically launch from established platforms. The Quakers, though politically marginalized, formed a robust network of 20,000 members with shared values and experience working in circles, providing the perfect foundation for Sharp's anti-slavery movement. Similarly, AA's Bill W. built upon the Oxford Group's existing Christian movement. Today, the internet serves as an unprecedented open platform, spawning countless starfish organizations. The final foundation is the champion, someone who delivers relentless implementation while the catalyst provides vision. Thomas Clarkson embodied this role in the abolitionist movement, complementing Sharp's catalytic leadership with tireless promotion. Unlike the subtle charisma of catalysts, champions possess magnetic personalities that draw people in completely. When Clarkson became convinced of slavery's horrors, he channeled his energy into full-time activism, traveling extensively, collecting evidence, publishing newsletters, creating buttons, lobbying parliament, and establishing abolitionist circles in every town he visited. These five foundations worked powerfully together when Elizabeth Cady Stanton launched the women's rights movement. After experiencing the hypocrisy of being silenced at anti-slavery conventions, Stanton became a catalyst who connected with the pre-existing Quaker network, organized a women's rights convention, and found her champion in Susan B. Anthony. Through creating circles, tapping into a timely ideology, leveraging a pre-existing network, and partnering with a champion, Stanton changed history by setting events in motion and then letting go. At first glance, Aaron Hoffman and Josh Sage appear complete opposites. Hoffman, the polished business wheeler-dealer comfortable with Fortune 500 CEOs. Sage, the laid-back California environmental activist. Yet both share a crucial quality. They're catalysts, individuals with a unique ability to initiate decentralized organizations. Jimmy Wales, Wikipedia's catalyst, exemplifies the pattern with his pathologically optimistic nature and deep trust in community. Wales admits Wikipedia's predecessor, Nupedia, failed due to its top-down approach, while Wikipedia thrived by trusting users to self-organize. Catalysts employ several essential tools that enable them to spark decentralized movements. First is genuine interest in others. They see people as walking novels and can make even the mundane fascinating by asking the right questions. This authentic curiosity makes people feel understood and open to change. Second, catalysts thrive on loose connections, maintaining meaningful interactions with thousands of casual acquaintances. Third, catalysts excel at mapping social networks, constantly visualizing connections. Fourth, catalysts possess a genuine desire to help others. This isn't just altruism, but the essential fuel that powers their networks. Finally, catalysts exhibit unwavering passion and meet people where they are, not pushing solutions, but listening intently. While both are leaders, catalysts and CEOs operate fundamentally differently. CEOs command from atop hierarchies as bosses, while catalysts interact as peers and friends. CEOs lead through command and control, catalysts through trust. CEOs must be rational to create shareholder value. Catalysts rely on emotional intelligence to build relationships. CEOs are directive and powerful. Catalysts inspire collaboration around ideology. CEOs seek the limelight. Catalysts work behind scenes. Despite these differences, catalysts have valuable roles within traditional organizations, especially when innovation is needed. Deborah Alvarez Rodriguez demonstrated this at Goodwill by deliberately creating chaos through cross-functional teams that incorporated employee ideas, boosting both morale and profits. Catalysts excel as agents of change rather than guardians of tradition. They're ideal for situations demanding radical thinking, but may suffocate in overly structured environments. The chapter opens with a scene at Berkeley's Long Hall Info Shop, where a catalyst named Sky is teaching animal rights activists how to sabotage hunts. Like a union organizer, Sky moves from town to town, connecting with local activists, building trust, and gradually introducing direct action concepts. He identifies receptive individuals and helps form autonomous groups without imposing himself as their leader. When combating decentralized organizations, attacking the catalyst or individual circles proves futile. Like Australian divers who tried killing starfish by cutting them in half, only creating more starfish. The only effective approach is targeting the ideology itself. In Kenya's Kibera slum, where Al-Qaeda cells operate among people living in extreme poverty, Ingrid Munro created the Jamii Bara Trust, offering microloans to slum residents. Success stories like Wilson's, a former criminal who transformed his life, demonstrate how Jamii Bara changes the prevailing ideology from hopelessness to opportunity. The second strategy involves centralizing decentralized organizations. The Americans finally conquer the Apaches with a brilliantly simple approach, giving cattle to the Nantons. Once these leaders possessed scarce resources, their power shifted from symbolic to material. They could reward and punish tribe members by controlling this resource. This transformed the flat power structure into a hierarchy, with Nantons fighting each other for seats on tribal councils. The once decentralized Apache society fractured into a zero-sum battle over resources, making them controllable like the centralized Aztecs. When decentralization proves too resilient to change internally, the third strategy emerges. Become a starfish yourself to fight the starfish. In Kenya's slums, locals like Joseph have superior knowledge about Al-Qaeda cells in their neighborhoods. Mahmoud's government implemented this strategy by creating small, independent circles of police officers and military experts who hunt terrorist cells by night. These circles operate autonomously. Members don't know how many other circles exist or who belongs to them. Despite costing 1/100th of other counterterrorism efforts, this approach works because these locals know their communities intimately. The hybrid organization combines centralization's structure with decentralization's bottom-up approach. These organizations maintain traditional corporate structures while strategically decentralizing customer experiences. eBay exemplifies this model, a centralized company with headquarters and hierarchy that decentralizes the customer experience. Unlike OnSale, which verified and guaranteed products, eBay built trust through user ratings, shifting policing to the community. This decentralized trust system became eBay's greatest competitive advantage. When Yahoo and Amazon tried competing with fee-free auction sites, sellers stayed with eBay because their established reputations allowed them to command premium prices. Amazon successfully combined centralization with decentralized user reviews. Reviewers like JPGM contribute thoughtful content without compensation, motivated by the same forces driving Wikipedia contributors, the innate desire to contribute to a community. Amazon channels this generosity into a valuable decentralized review network that enhances its centralized business model. Intuit embraced decentralization by launching TaxAlmanac.org, a Wikipedia equivalent for tax issues where users help each other. The site deliberately minimizes Intuit branding to foster authentic community. Meanwhile, technology giants like Google, IBM, and Sun Microsystems have gone further by incorporating user input into their core products. Google's search algorithm leverages collective user behavior, while IBM and Sun embraced open-source software despite potential revenue losses. Some centralized companies decentralize internally while maintaining traditional structures. Jack Welch transformed GE by separating it into independent business units that operated as standalone entities, increasing accountability and efficiency. Similarly, venture capital firm Draper Fisher Jurvetson decentralized by establishing offices worldwide with 71 partners, enabling them to discover opportunities like Skype that traditional centralized VCs would miss. Even without structural changes, companies can benefit from decentralization through processes like David Cooper Writer's appreciative inquiry, which breaks down hierarchies by facilitating meaningful conversations between employees at all levels. After interviewing each other, participants form circles to dream and brainstorm, with every idea given credence regardless of who suggested it. This process draws knowledge from the edge of the network, giving low-level employees a chance to share ideas directly with executives. The pursuit of the ideal balance between centralized control and decentralized autonomy defines organizational success. Peter Drucker discovered this while studying General Motors in 1943, observing their federal decentralization that gave division managers significant autonomy while maintaining central structure. Despite GM's success with this hybrid approach, they rejected Drucker's suggestions to incorporate more starfish concepts like customer feedback. While 1980s GM factories maintained rigid hierarchies where workers performed single tasks and alarms sounded when lines stopped, Toyota operated differently. Employees worked in autonomous teams, every suggestion was implemented, management hierarchies were flattened, and pay scales equalized. When Toyota took over GM's failing Fremont plant, renamed Nummy, keeping the same union workforce but implementing decentralized principles, productivity rose 60% and quality dramatically improved. The difference wasn't cultural. Toyota continuously pursued the decentralized sweet spot, while GM refused to change its hybrid model. The online auction industry demonstrates the importance of finding the right decentralization balance. OnSale, once the market leader backed by top venture capitalists, sold new and refurbished computers through a centralized model with limited decentralized elements. Despite its success, OnSale offered only 500 to 1,200 items daily. When eBay emerged with a far more decentralized approach, allowing anyone to sell and buy thousands of items, the market dramatically shifted. eBay found the sweet spot. Not as decentralized as Craigslist, which lacked user ratings for security, but decentralized enough to allow peer-to-peer transactions with accountability through user ratings. Toyota occupied the automotive industry's decentralized sweet spot. Had they centralized like GM, they would have reduced quality by taking power from employees. Had they decentralized too far by eliminating structure and letting circles work on whatever they wanted, consistency would suffer. Toyota found the perfect balance, enough decentralization for creativity with sufficient structure to ensure consistency. Industries experience constant tension between centralization and decentralization forces. The music industry shifted from decentralized individual musicians to centralized record labels with the phonograph's invention. Economies of scale drove further consolidation into mega labels until Napster dramatically shifted the sweet spot toward decentralization. Apple found the middle ground with iTunes, selling individual songs legally for 99 cents while allowing users to share content through podcasts. Just as the telephone revolutionized communications and technology transformed warfare, decentralization has created an entirely new rulebook that many established organizations fail to recognize. The Soviets invested in loudspeakers rather than telephones after 1917, missing the shift toward individual communication. Similarly, the French built the Maginot Line for WW2 based on outdated WW1 tactics. Today's industries and governments often employ outdated strategies against decentralized opponents, as MGM discovered in battling P2P music swapping. Traditional business wisdom valued size and power, but decentralization has inverted this principle. Skype, with just a few employees and computers, disrupted telecommunications giant AT&T because it didn't need to support massive infrastructure and payroll. Similarly, eMule and Craigslist thrived by combining small organizational footprints with large user networks. This new paradigm creates fundamental economic advantages for small players and dramatically reduces market entry costs. While the network effect, where each additional user increases overall network value, traditionally required significant investment, starfish organizations can leverage it at virtually no cost. Adding users to platforms like Skype and Craigslist costs nothing, while creating communities where each new member adds value. In decentralized organizations, chaos is a virtue. While conventional thinking demands structure and organization, Starfish systems thrive on freedom and disorder. These environments allow users to do whatever they want: download songs, create software, write Wikipedia articles, or drive 20-foot giraffe cars. This seeming chaos creates perfect incubators for creative, destructive, innovative, or crazy ideas. In Starfish organizations, the most valuable knowledge exists at the fringes, not the center. Like Ed Sheeran during the 1935 hurricane, who knew more than headquarters, people on the ground often possess the most accurate information. Toyota recognized this by encouraging assembly line workers to innovate. IBM and Sun opened their software to global engineers. Wikipedia thrives because somewhere in the world, someone knows everything about Greyhounds, South American history, or Twinkies, and the platform lets them share that specialized knowledge. Beyond just possessing knowledge, people throughout Starfish organizations have a fundamental desire to share and contribute. Burning Man participants work year-round creating elaborate art installations. Contributors spend hours editing Wikipedia articles. Accountants share expertise on taxalmanac.org. Users write free Amazon reviews, and software engineers stay up all night improving Apache code, all driven by an intrinsic desire to contribute to something larger than themselves. Attack a decentralized organization and you'll face the Hydra effect. Cut off one head, two more grow in its place. The Spanish learned this fighting the Apaches. When record labels destroyed Napster, they got Kazaa and Emule. Target Al-Qaeda's leadership and the organization spreads further. Ideology fuels decentralized organizations. Groups like the Animal Liberation Front exist primarily as ideologies with minimal structure or paid staff. Remove the ideology and the Starfish crumbles. Most successful Starfish organizations began with seemingly radical ideologies. Granville Sharp's notion that slavery should be abolished, Pierre Omidyar's belief that people are trustworthy, Bill W.'s conviction that alcoholics could help each other without experts. When fighting decentralized organizations proves futile, joining them becomes the best survival strategy. Companies increasingly adopt hybrid approaches. GM giving assembly line workers power, Jack Welch granting GE units independence, Sun releasing control of proprietary software. In our digital world, decentralization continues transforming industry and society. Fighting these forces proves counterproductive, while harnessing them creates immense power, as music swappers, Skype users, eBay merchants, Wikipedia contributors, Craigslist communities, and recovering addicts demonstrate. What initially appears as messy chaos reveals itself as one of the world's most powerful forces.